working together for about 2 years, and in that time we've been going out giving presentations that we call Walk, Bus, Bike, Roads to a Better Society. And the focus of the presentation is really to help people realize you don't need to give up your car, but that you have other options to move around your community. And we think that you don't have to be carless to have more in your life in terms of more options, more options for moving around, more options for what you do with your time. And what I mean by that is if you are walking, you're also getting exercise. If you're using a bicycle, mm-hmm. you're getting exercise while you're moving around. And even if you're riding public transit, you're walking to the bus. Mm-hmm. You have the option of doing things like, you know, reading, listening to music, writing,
knitting,
whatever you know, daydreaming, and without having to pay attention to the cars around you. So there's, and you're also thinking about your community differently. I mean, when you're walking someplace or you're bicycling, you're seeing things differently than you are if you're in a car, when you have to pay attention to those brake lights in front of you.
Yeah, more intimately, if you will. Mm-hmm. More intimately. You see the cracks and details, and I think it also has a huge increase in social connections and interaction.
Right, mm-hmm. which gets to the whole quality of life issue. We don't see using our cars less as a deprivation. We see it as a way of fostering community, of enriching our lives and the lives of those around us.
And tell us about the actions and or the history of this committee. How did it form? What was the inspiration?
Well, there was actually... We start out as a committee. We think of ourselves now as more of a project, and it's. But there was an alternative transportation committee in Simply Living for a couple of years. Actually, that Chris, who can't be here tonight, got started originally with a couple other people, and we really evolved to. What's missing is education in the community, and it's the default right now is that we walk out of our houses or walk out of our office buildings. We get in our car and we drive places, and so what we're really wanting to do is help people understand that if we want to have a healthier environment, if we want to address issues like obesity in our community, if we want to make communities scalable to people rather than to automobiles, which really changes the framework of how communities are built and designed, that we need to think differently about how we move around. So that's a lot of why we talk about the change here that needs to happen is not technology. The technology is in place. I mean, there's hybrid cars already. Yeah. You know, we have bicycles already. We have, you know, more and more technologies to reduce fuel consumption. And there's a lot of them out there that aren't even being used in terms of automobiles. But the real change here is behavioral change. And we also have, you know, around the world, cities and nations are building incredible transportation systems. And right now here in the U.S., we are really falling behind. And you know, I think right now you're seeing in Central Ohio a transformation becoming more and more a movement towards bicycles. And finally, we're seeing, you know, the Columbus Bicycle Plan being put in place. Mm-hmm. But it's still, you know, the changes now happening are a long way behind where a lot of other countries have been for a long time. So that's why we talk a lot about a lot of this is behavioral, that a car is luxury, not necessity. We're a one-car family, my wife and I, and I have to drive my daughter to Hilliard every Monday for a dance class, and because I have to drive there because there's no other option to get her out there, mm-hmm. I consider that a luxury to have the car to be able to do that, and that she can take this dance class, you know, 10 miles away from our house in a place that's not accessible by bus or easily by bicycle. But the rest of the week, I've used walking, bicycling, and public transit to move around. So that's where the car is luxury. I have it because I need it for that one option.
And that's the point, I think, is that we see all of these alternatives playing together better than they do separately. Like, I took the bus down here tonight, and there was a bike on the front of the bus, and that's great to be able to pick the form of transportation that works for you at the time. Like, I love to ride my bike, but I'm not a cold weather person. So this time of year, it's way too much for me to get on my bike, but I can take a bus. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not about being absolute and always doing one thing, but it is about thinking about what you're doing and thinking more creatively about what you're doing. I like to think of this whole concept in terms of zones. The idea being that within about a half a mile of wherever you are, it's very comfortable to walk, mm-hmm. Maybe up to a mile. And then the next zone out from there, you know, maybe up to 3 to 5 miles is comfortable biking. And beyond that, you can use a bus. And beyond about, you know, maybe 20 miles, trains. You know, today we tend to think of everything in car terms. You know, if I'm going two blocks or I'm going 100 miles, doesn't matter, I take my car, right? Yeah. And that's a mentality that doesn't make sense. It doesn't work for us as people. It doesn't work for our communities.
Yeah, it's used as a measure of distance. How far is it? Oh, 2 hours away.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the assumption, of course, is obviously you took your car.
Yeah. Our North American measurement system is based on football fields and car travel time.
Yes. Yes. But I spent a lot of time when I was back in the corporate world traveling in Europe, and I didn't even think about it, but the communities there were so walkable. You know, from London to Nottingham to Basel. I mean, every place I went, I rarely got in a car. And it was great. You know, it wasn't a deprivation, but the communities were set up that way. And in America, we have proven that if we don't do anything, what we end up with are large concrete parking lots, which are not particularly fun to work in. They're not community, you know, building in any kind of way. And so that's why I think we've tended to become more activists, and not just bicycle activists, but bus activists, and thinking about how our communities are structured. I mentioned I live in Worthington, and I became part of a group called Sustainable Worthington, and we've tried to get involved in our city council and in some of the committees within the government to try to really promote the whole concept of walkability and what that means. But mm-hmm. it's kind of a foreign concept.
Mm-hmm. And are you more the, you're the bus, you're, or I know you're all integrated.
Yeah.
But is one person more of one of the other?
Yes.
You're the bus.
No, I'm actually walkable communities. I'm the walkable communities.
I'm the bus man.
You're the bus man.
And Chris is our bike guy.
Yeah.
But we've all worn off on each other, you know, because I take the bus and I ride my bike and, you know, we all do all of it. So.
Yeah. And I'm now even starting to ride my bicycle in colder weather, and a lot because of what I've learned from Chris and some others, I am now riding in traffic on streets, you know, and I guess I've done it to some extent on some streets like Summit for quite a while, for a number mm-hmm. of years, but now even just jumping in the lane right on High Street or Indianola, and that's really new for me, but mm-hmm. it's amazing. The, as you start doing it, you start realizing, no, I have a right to be here, and
yeah.
and I also have a right to say, okay, this doesn't feel comfortable, I'm getting off the street and mm-hmm. taking a side street.
Yeah.
Not a sidewalk, but a side street.
Exactly.
And I think, you know, that's part of what we try to help people understand is you don't need to make your change immediately. I mean, I've been commuting by bus and bicycle for, you know, 10, 15 years or longer, but I've learned both, you know, the bus system better over time, and I've learned over time how to ride my bicycle and where to ride it and where I feel safe and where I don't feel safe and what I need to for a better commute or a better recreational ride yeah. on my bicycle.
Well, we talk about intentional and intentionalism. I mean, how much of our, I've been doing it in my life, and I'm assuming you guys, intentionally arranging your life and your activities to fit within these kind of these modes. I wouldn't accept a job that was more than a comfortable bike ride away. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't probably attend an event or a party or a meeting that was outside of that realm. How much of your lives has been like that, where you do or don't do something based on that?
That's a really good question. I would like to do even more than I do, but one of the reasons that we picked Worthington is because it is an old style town mm-hmm. and there really is a downtown center. So my husband and I ride our bicycles to the Worthington Farmers Market, and that's big for us. We do that every week. We have so many baskets on our bikes, you cannot imagine. Fred weighed the produce we came home with last year. One time we had 35 pounds of produce that we brought home on our bikes. So, you know, to me that's big. In the United States, there are not quite as many options for selecting a truly walkable community. But the point is that when you buy a house, you're not just buying a house, you're buying a community. Mm-hmm. And we now have this huge list of criteria for the next time we move of trying to find a community that really fits that. So one thing is to move where you want to be, but another thing is to try to change your community to be more of what you want it to be. So we found that at the end of farmers market season, we were kind of dead in the water and couldn't do what we wanted to do. So we helped organize over 1,000 hours of volunteer effort in Worthington to bring in our winter farmers market. So for me, part of being intentional is not just to change my own behavior, but to work in my community to figure out what our community can do.
Mm-hmm. And I'd say for me, it's much the same. We were very intentional, in particular, my wife and I, when we bought our house, that we looked for a community that was walkable and where there were stores and restaurants and shops very nearby, where our social community was very nearby so that we could walk to them or easily bicycle in a fairly short distance, and also that we located between three bus lines and half a mile from the Olentangy Bikeway. And all of those, when we were picking our house, I mean, that was part of our search criteria 13 years ago, was to really find a place that would allow us to reduce our reliance on a car. And even before that, we lived up in northern Clintonville and still on the bus line. And so, I mean, I was riding the bus downtown nearly every day to work at that point anyway, but we wanted to be even more intentional about scaling our community down even more to where it was more walkable and bicycle friendly. And I think it also shows that Columbus is a very car-oriented community, but it doesn't mean you have to use a car here all the time. And there are communities that are walkable. There are places that are wonderful for bicycling. And we have a public transit system. It's much better to get you in and out of downtown. And there's a lot of, you know, improvement, a lot of room for improvement in our transit system and our bicycle infrastructure. But the basis is there, and we need to encourage our community leaders, and we need to encourage our neighbors to make changes that will continue to build that infrastructure.
An interesting note, recently in the news I read that COTA is moving its administrative offices downtown to, I think, just on Front Street there, or maybe High.
I think it's on High.
Yeah. High and Pearl Alley, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And one of the interesting things I read in that article was something about how, it might have been Bill LaHoda, but excuse me if I'm misquoting or missaying who, how wants the employees of the system to be able to use the system to get to work themselves. And I thought that was a pretty powerful sense for change and intent. But we're going to take our break. We're going to hear a little bit of a Columbus band, Marseille Marseille, from their new album, The Endless Desert in the MTC. You can check out them on their MySpace page, Marseille Marseille, and this track is called 6,000 Miles. And once again, we're here on Cranksters on WCRS 102.1 and 98.3 low power FM community radio for Columbus, the service of Simply Living. And we'll be back with Eric Davies and Lisa Stegenborg from Walk Bike Bus Alternative Transportation Committee after this tune. Thank you. back here on Cranksters on WCRS 102.1 and 98.3. Low power FM, community radio for Central Ohio, and a service of Simply Living. We're a volunteer run, listener supported, non commercial community radio station. Check out our website, WCRSFM.org, to see our schedule, learn how to donate, and see how you can volunteer. And that song you just heard was from Marseille Marseille, local Columbus rock and roll pop band, from their album The Endless Desert and Empty Sea. That song was 3,000 Miles, and you can check out their MySpace page. It's Marseille Marseille. And we're back here on Cranksters with the Simply Living Alternative Transportation Committee, Walk, Bike, Bus, Eric Davies and Lisa Stegenborg. You guys glad to be back?
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Whoa. Well, thank you.
The break was way too long.
It started loitering about, twiddling your thumbs. But anyway, so tell us some more about alternative transportation.
Well, one of the things, you know, like I said earlier at the beginning of the show, we do presentations and would be happy to talk to any group that wants to have us out. We have spoken before in churches, community organizations, nonprofit organizations, and one of the things that we really try to present is a picture of how thinking about transportation alternatives also is a way to save money, energy, and create a healthier lifestyle for ourselves and healthier communities. And one of the slides that we use says, well, why should I bicycle? And I know this is a very bicycle-friendly audience, and maybe probably a very astute bicycle-friendly audience as well. But one of the statistics we throw out is just in terms of the amount of energy, and we look at calories as a unit of energy, and a bicycle uses 35 calories per mile versus a car, which uses 1,860 calories per mile, and that's from the World Watch Institute. Another is that the energy and resources used to produce one medium-sized car could produce 100 bicycles. So when you start thinking about it in terms of economics and natural resources, you begin to see why we need other choices. 7 to 12 bicycles can park in the same space as one car. A meter of width of road can carry 1,500 bicycles per hour, but only 170 cars. So that's part of the trade-offs, and I know right now we're in a slow economy and facing, I guess, recession, or we're in recession, depending on who you talk to. And just looking at the cost of transportation, the cost of transportation are the highest in communities that are very car-dependent. So actually, per person, the cost of transportation in Columbus or a place like Houston, Texas, are higher than they are in places like New York City or Washington, D.C. So now housing may be more expensive in those locations, but in many families, transportation is the second or third highest expense. And also, the farther you are down in the income scale, in other words, if you are lower income, your transportation costs are usually even higher relative to a family that is middle class or upper middle class or upper class. So it's definitely an economic issue as well as an environmental issue.
You said that you give this presentation to community groups and such. Mm-hmm. Would you like to share how those groups can maybe get a hold of you?
Mm-hmm. If you contact Simply Living and ask for Ben, Ben is our scheduler and would be delighted to get us to your organization. The phone number is 447-0296.
Yes, 447-0296, or simplyliving.org as well.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, what else what else do you guys have to share with us?
One of the other, while we're in the numbers game, if you look at how much it costs to ride the bus, let's say that you went for a top-of-the-line bus pass and you got an express bus pass. That would be $477 a year. On the other hand, a typical car, we picked a 2003 Toyota Corolla as sort of a mid-range car. According to Edmunds.com, if you add up all the costs to own that car, averaged over 5 years, assuming you drive about 15,000 miles an hour, it would be $4,800. So, you know, cars are very expensive. We tend to think of them as a completely hidden cost, but they really are a luxury. And I think our society needs to start thinking about cars more as a luxury. In fact, before the show started, Eric and I were talking about, you know, there's a lot of talk about bailing out the big three automakers, right? Well, maybe instead of a bailout, we could take that money and say, hey, could you create buses for us and spread them around the country? Because what we really need is not more cars on the road. We really need a lot more buses on the road. We really need a lot more bicycles on the road. And we need to restructure our communities.
Where are a lot of our buses manufactured and made? Kind of out there question.
You know, that's a good question.
That is a good
question. I mean, I certainly know of the different companies that COTA, for instance, buys its buses from, but I've never researched where those companies are located. Yeah. I know a lot of train cars for light rail, commuter trains are made in Europe. I believe Japan makes quite a few, and obviously they put quite a few on the tracks as well. But I don't know in terms of buses. I think there is one big Canadian company that makes quite a few buses, and I can't remember which kind of company that is.
Yeah.
But I think what Lisa's point is that why aren't we manufacturing our future transportation needs here? Why isn't there a huge bicycle plant opening in Columbus and selling bicycles around Ohio?
Yeah.
You know, why in this depressed economy aren't we looking at a revolution in terms of how we plan our communities and beginning to build light rail cars and buses in Ohio and right here in central Ohio?
There has been a boom in independent bicycle fabricators in places like New York and Portland and Wisconsin, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Chicago as well. But they're more of a, they're still sort of kind of marginal. There's nobody really putting out a mass produced bicycle in the States. I'm a big safety guru. I might, at least in physical sense, I am. What do walkable, bikeable communities have to do to increase safety in a neighborhood? Some 40,000 Americans are killed by automobiles a year, and there is something like 50-some thousand American GIs killed in Vietnam War, which is two similar numbers, but two different time spans. I sometimes say that's a Vietnam War every 16 months. Where's the what's with the complacency? Where's the protests?
Right. No, I couldn't agree with you more. You know, obviously, the more cars on the road, the more traffic, the more accidents there are. The fewer cars on the road, the safer we all are. And there are two types of safety. One is, you know, physical injury when you're hit by a car, and the other is crime. And clearly, eyes on the street reduce crime. So the more people that we have out on public transportation, walking and bicycling, the safer our neighborhoods are. And also, the fewer cars we have on the road, the fewer crashes that we have. I mean, it's very related. So I think that's a great question, and one we don't think about at all.
Yeah. People often say they want to get the kids off the street. I'd like to keep them in the street.
Right.
You know, fill the street up. So many kids.
Yes, and adults.
Yeah, and everybody. Adults.
Everybody.
Fill it up. The cars can't even get through.
Right. That would be great.
But, yeah, I'm a huge safety guru. There's a big public discussion right now of converting Summit and 4th Streets back to two-way, or narrowing it, or adding medians, all kinds of street furniture or traffic calming tools. Have you guys worked on anything like that, where you work with city governments or regional governments on improving infrastructure in any way?
I am currently a member of the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission Citizen Advisory Commission, and Eric was for a while until his daughter started having her dance on the same night. But yes, and also I'm an advocate within Worthington. We've just been talking recently about the new I-270-23 interchange and how to make that bicycle and pedestrian friendly. These are very non-trivial issues. The Ohio Department of Transportation has a long legacy of being very auto-centric, and that doesn't change overnight. So within Columbus, we've recently started talking about having a complete streets policy, but there's a huge difference between talking about these things and getting it to the point where this is the way the default thinking is, so that it's not an add-on, it's just part of a core project that, of course, we're thinking about how to put bicycles and pedestrians and buses on streets safely and effectively.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the Wyland Park and Summit Street, 4th Street project, and I actually weighed in on that project when they were doing their interviews and surveys, and talked a little bit about the fact that I do believe those should be two-way streets. And when streets are scaled down and they are not big, huge, wide, three and four lanes, five, six lanes even at times with high-speed traffic, then it makes it more scalable for people, and crosswalks are safer and sidewalks are even safer, and you feel like you have more of a, you know, some sense of protection. And I think even just reducing parking lots, building buildings to up to streets, you know, the even downtown and the building projects that are occurring downtown, Gay Street has been transformed because of them building new buildings and new apartments and new offices along Gay Street, making it two-way, and then also just putting in the little median. And the other night, somebody wanted to give me a ride from one meeting to the next, and I said, no, I want to walk. And I walked across downtown right down Gay Street, and it was just wonderful. And, you know, that's what I'm talking about, when walking is appealing and it's safe.
All right. Well, we've run low on time, and I'd like to thank again my guests, Eric Davies and Lisa Stegenborg, and get well out there to Chris Lors, the three members of the Simply Living Alternative Transportation Committee. If you'd like to talk more to these individuals, how would they get a hold of you again?
Go to simplyliving.org and send a message, and we will reply. We would love to hear from you.
All right. Well, thank you once again, Columbus. You all have an excellent weekend. This was Cranksters. I'm your host, Zach Hinkle, and you are listening to WCRS 102.1 and 98.3 low power FM radio, Central Ohio's community radio station and a service of Simply Living. Peace out, everybody. Have a good weekend. We'll be right back.